Imagine driving your car every single day with the handbrake slightly pulled up.
Right.
You would still get to work, you know, you could still navigate traffic, and the car would technically function. But over the years, the engine, the transmission, the brake pads, they would be slowly destroyed by that constant underlying resistance.
Absolutely.
Today, we are taking a deep dive into the anatomical equivalent of that handbrake, which is the tongue tie. Clinically, I believe it's known as ankyloglossia. And our mission today is to really cut through a very specific kind of noise.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise out there.
There really is. If you're joining us right now, there's a strong chance you might be, well, an adult trying to understand chronic neck tension. Or perhaps more likely, you are a parent running on 2 hours of sleep, nursing a baby who is struggling, and you're staring at this mountain of online information that just feels utterly overwhelming and, frankly, terrifying.
It is terrifying. And the internet really thrives on sensationalism, doesn't it?
Oh, completely.
And when it comes to infant health or, unexplained chronic pain, that sensationalism finds a very captive, anxious audience. So we are going to strip all of that away today. We'll examine the clinical realities of what a tongue tie actually is physically, how it alters biomechanics across different stages of life, and why a comprehensive functional assessment is really the only sensible way forward.
And we're going to anchor this entire deep dive on one core clinical truth. We will return to this again and again. Function matters exponentially more than appearance.
Thought on.
The vast majority of people with a visible tongue tie, and that includes most babies, have absolutely no symptoms, experience no negative impacts, and will never require any treatment whatsoever.
That's exactly it. Ankyloglossia is simply a congenital anomaly, meaning it's present from birth. It's an isolated variation in anatomy. And to understand why we place so much emphasis on function over appearance, we really have to look closely at the biomechanics of the mouth, starting with the frenulum itself.
Right, so let's define that. Every single person has a lingual frenulum. If you lift your tongue in front of a mirror, it's that band of mucosal tissue connecting the underside of the tongue to the floor of the mouth.
Yes, everyone has one.
So a tongue tie occurs when that specific band is unusually short or tight or thick, which mechanically restricts the tongue's range of motion.
Exactly. And this anatomical variation is consistently present in the population. While varying diagnostic criteria make a single global figure quite elusive, large-scale newborn nursery studies frequently cite a prevalence of around 4.2%.
Okay, so relatively common.
Very common. The data also consistently shows it's more common in boys than in girls, and we sometimes see a genetic X-linked component. But again, in almost all cases, this is merely an anatomical quirk in a completely healthy individual.
And the appearance of these ties can vary wildly, right? You have anterior ties, which sit right near the tip of the tongue.
Yeah, the visible ones.
Right. Those are the highly visible ones, sometimes pulling the tip down to create this distinct sort of heart-shaped dip when a baby cries. But then you have posterior ties, which sit much further back. They're buried under the mucous membrane, making them incredibly difficult to spot with just a casual glance.
Which is really the first major clue that visual inspections are flawed. A practitioner or a parent might, look in the mouth, see no obvious anterior band, and assume there is no tie, completely missing a tight posterior restriction.
Ah, I see.
Conversely, they might see a prominent thick band and assume it's causing severe dysfunction when in reality, the tongue has perfect elasticity. The tissue's appearance is a remarkably poor predictor of its actual physical elasticity and the tongue's ultimate mobility.
Wait, hold on. If I am a parent running on 2 hours of sleep and I look in my baby's mouth and see a thick white band visibly tying their tongue to the floor of their mouth, you're telling me I shouldn't panic. Because that goes against every protective instinct I have. It looks like a glaring red flag.
It is entirely understandable to feel that way. We are conditioned to trust our eyes, right? If something looks tethered, we assume it's trapped. But the tongue is a complex muscular hydrostat.
A muscular hydrostat.
Yes, it has no bones. It functions similarly to an elephant's trunk or an octopus tentacle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it relies on this intricate interwoven matrix of muscles to elongate, elevate, and sweep. The frenulum is just a tether. If that tether has enough stretch, or if the tongue musculature is long enough to compensate, the organ can perform all of its complex duties perfectly well.
It's the boat and the dock analogy, isn't it?
Exactly.
The frenulum is the rope. The rope might be thick or it might be tied quite close to the hull, but the only metric that matters is whether that boat can still float out far enough into the water to do its job. If the boat can sail, The aesthetics of the rope are irrelevant.
That is a brilliant way to put it. And it's the exact reason why leading clinicians abandon visual grading in favor of functional grading. They use metrics like the tongue range of motion ratio.
How does that work?
Well, this involves measuring the maximal interincisal mouth opening, so how wide the jaw can open, and comparing it to how far the tip of the tongue can actively reach towards the roof of the mouth while the jaw is fully open.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's a mathematical assessment of mobility, testing the biomechanical limits of the tissue rather than just its visual thickness.
So if functions is the only true metric of a tongue tie, then we really need to map out what the tongue is actually required to do. And the fascinating part of this research, for me at least, is how the tongue's job description evolves.
It changes completely.
Right. The mechanical demands placed on it change drastically from infancy to adulthood, which is why a restriction manifests in entirely different ways depending on your age.
Precisely. In a newborn baby, the tongue has one overriding critical function, and that's feeding.
Mm-hmm.
And breast and bottle feeding demand completely different mechanics.
How so?
Well, to extract milk from a breast successfully, a baby doesn't just suck like they're using a straw. They have to physically extend the tongue over the lower gum line, cup it securely around the breast tissue to form a vacuum seal, and then initiate a peristaltic ripple.
Wait, a peristaltic ripple. That sounds intense.
It is incredible when you see it modeled. It's a sequential wave-like contraction running from the front of the tongue to the back, essentially rolling the milk out of the breast and guiding it down the throat while maintaining that negative pressure vacuum.
That's a serious workout.
It's a biomechanical marvel, honestly, requiring immense precision and stamina. Now, if the tongue is tightly restricted by the frenulum and cannot extend over the lower gum, that vital seal is broken. Air gets in.
Right.
And the peristaltic wave becomes shallow and ineffective. To compensate and keep the breast in their mouth, the baby will often clamp down using their gums and lips.
Which, I imagine, triggers a cascade of secondary problems. For the baby, they're working twice as hard for half the milk. They become exhausted, feeds drag on for an hour, they swallow excess air causing severe colic or reflux, and they might really struggle to gain weight.
Exactly.
And for the mother, that compensatory gum clamping causes excruciating nipple trauma and pain. Because the breast isn't being efficiently drained by that wave motion, the mother's milk supply can eventually downregulate and drop.
It creates a deeply distressing loop of fatigue and pain. However, we must reiterate the core premise here. The vast majority of babies with a visible tongue tie manage this complex mechanic without any difficulty whatsoever.
They just figure it out.
They do. They establish the seal, they create the wave, and they breastfeed successfully without ever needing a surgical release. Furthermore, passive bottle feeding is often entirely unaffected by a tie.
Because the mechanics of a bottle are different. An artificial teat doesn't require that same profound cupping and negative pressure wave. Gravity and basic compression do a lot of the work.
Spot on.
So if a baby is feeding well, gaining weight, and the mother is pain-free, that visible tie is just an anatomical quirk to be ignored. But let's move the timeline forward. As that baby transitions into a toddler and a young child, the tongue's job description expands. It goes from extracting liquid to processing solid food and, of course, articulating speech.
Yes, and the transition to solid foods requires lateralization. That's the tongue's ability to sweep side to side. When you chew, your tongue is constantly working to catch food that escapes the teeth and push it back onto the molars.
Oh, I've never really thought about that, but it's constantly moving.
Constantly. So a severely tethered tongue struggles to reach the corners of the mouth. Children might gag frequently, struggle to manage complex textures like meat, or start swallowing food whole because they simply cannot manipulate it safely for chewing.
And then there's the speech component, which I know is a massive source of anxiety for parents. The research shows a tie can affect specific, high-frequency consonant sounds that require the tip of the tongue to strike the palate or the back of the upper teeth.
Yes, exactly.
We're talking about sounds like S, Z, T, D, L, and particularly R. But there is an absolutely vital distinction to be made here about cognitive development. A tongue tie does not cause a language development delay.
That is so important to highlight. The mechanics of speech and the neurology of language are entirely separate systems. Language delay is cognitive. It's the brain's formulation, processing, and understanding of vocabulary and grammar. Ankyloglossia is strictly mechanical.
It's a hardware limitation, not a software issue.
Perfectly said. A child with a restricted frenulum will acquire language, comprehend instructions, and formulate sentences at a perfectly typical rate, even if the physical articulation of a few specific consonant sounds remains muffled or difficult.
But the most surprising element of childhood tongue tie isn't about eating or speaking at all. It's about what the tongue is doing when it's completely at rest. When we are silent and breathing normally, the tongue is supposed to rest firmly up against the roof of the mouth.
Yeah, and this resting posture is fundamentally orthopedic. The human skull is highly malleable during childhood. The constant, gentle, upward pressure of the tongue resting against the palate acts as the primary mechanical force driving the lateral expansion of the maxilla, the upper jaw.
It's exactly like the scaffolding inside a cathedral holding up the roof. That broad upward force shapes the palate into a wide, shallow U-shape over the years.
Yes.
But if the tongue is tethered low in the floor of the mouth by a tight frenulum, the scaffolding is gone. The palate doesn't receive that outward pressure, so as the skull grows, the roof of the mouth collapses inward and upward, forming a narrow, high-arched V-shape.
The implications of that structural shift are profound because the architecture of the mouth directly dictates the architecture of the airway. A high, narrow palate means there's less room for adult teeth, leading to severe crowding.
Right.
But crucially, the roof of the mouth is also the floor of the nasal cavity. If the palate is pushed upward into a high arch, it aggressively encroaches on the nasal airway, shrinking the volume of space available for breathing through the nose.
This means a tethered tongue can literally alter the skeletal development of a child's face and permanently shrink their airway.
It can, yes.
Which forces the child to become a chronic mouth breather because they simply cannot pull enough oxygen through their compromised nasal passages. And this leads to snoring, fragmented sleep, and sleep-disordered breathing.
It perfectly illustrates the cascade of functional impairment. An anatomical restriction alters the muscular function. That altered muscular function changes the orthopedic development of the bone. And that altered bone structure impairs the physiological function of breathing. It is a highly interconnected system.
Which brings us to adulthood. If a low resting tethered tongue can reshape the skull and the airway of a child, what is happening to the adult who has lived with an untreated tongue tie for 30 or 40 years?
Well, the adult body is a masterclass in adaptation, but that adaptation requires massive amounts of muscular compensation. Now, we should note that adult tongue tie research leans heavily on clinical observation and retrospective studies rather than, you know, large double-blind randomized trials.
So we take it with a pinch of salt.
Exactly. We approach the claims with scientific rigor and healthy skepticism. But the clinical consensus is clear. While many adults remain completely asymptomatic, those who do suffer are usually experiencing the cumulative toll of decades of compensation.
Going back to our hook at the start of the deep dive, this is the car driving with the handbrake on.
Yeah.
By the time someone is 35, the symptom isn't usually, my tongue feels tight. The symptoms are chronic, migrating pain in the secondary systems that have been doing the tongue's job.
Precisely. If the tongue cannot elevate to assist in swallowing, speaking, and stabilizing the jaw, the surrounding musculature has to engage. The suprahyoid muscles, the digastric muscles under the chin, the masseters in the jaw, and the deep cervical flexors of the neck are suddenly forced into a state of chronic, low-grade contraction to help the mouth function.
Wow.
Multiply that tension over tens of thousands of swallows and words spoken every single day for decades. It manifests as chronic tension headaches, temporomandibular joint dysfunction, and deep neck fatigue.
And because of that altered palate shape, we discussed the high, narrow roof of the mouth. Adults with untreated ties frequently suffer from airway compromise. They're often chronic mouth breathers who snore heavily, and there's a documented association with obstructive sleep apnea, where the airway physically collapses during sleep.
Evaluating an adult requires looking far past the frenulum. A practitioner has to assess the entire craniofacial structure, the airway volume, and the muscular compensation patterns of the head and neck. The tie is simply the domino that started the chain reaction.
So, if appearance is this deceiving, and the body is this adept at masking the root cause through layers of muscular compensation, how does a parent or an adult actually know when to intervene? If the mere presence of a tie isn't a reason to treat it, what is the protocol?
The clinical protocol is watchful waiting, paired with a comprehensive functional assessment only when triggered by persistent real-world difficulties. If you have a visible tie but you are feeding comfortably, growing well, speaking clearly, and breathing through your nose, you do absolutely nothing.
The trigger is the dysfunction. A baby failing to thrive.
Yeah.
A mother in agonizing pain despite working with lactation specialists. A child who habitually mouth breathes and snores. An adult with intractable jaw tension and sleep apnea.
Right, exactly.
When those dysfunctions are present, who is the right professional to evaluate the mechanics? Because it's obviously not just a quick glance.
No, you need a practitioner trained specifically in functional assessment. This is never a quick 5-second look under the tongue with a flashlight. For infants, it's often an international board-certified lactation consultant with advanced training in oral biomechanics.
Okay.
For older children and adults, it might be an airway-focused dentist, a myofunctional therapist, or a speech and language therapist.
What exactly are they doing during these assessments? How do they measure the mechanics?
They conduct a dynamic evaluation. For a baby, they'll observe a full feed, assessing the latch, the swallow coordination, and the mother's pain levels. For a child or adult, they measure the tongue range of motion ratio, they evaluate the lateral sweep, they check for tension in the floor of the mouth, and they assess nasal breathing capability.
So a much broader picture.
Yes, they're looking at the entire neuromuscular system working in real time.
And if they find that the tongue is indeed heavily restricted and causing this cascade of issues, the instinct is usually to rush into a surgical procedure to snip the tie. But the research strongly cautions against treating surgery as a standalone magic bullet.
A phrenotomy or phrenectomy, the surgical release of the tissue is highly effective for the subset of patients who genuinely require it, but releasing the tissue does not instantly rewire decades or even months of muscular compensation.
Right, the habit is still there.
Exactly. It simply removes the physical barrier. This is why interdisciplinary care, particularly orofacial myofunctional therapy, is so critical.
Myofunctional therapy is essentially physiotherapy for the mouth and face. It's about actively retraining the neuromuscular pathways.
Precisely. If a tongue has been tethered to the floor of the mouth for years, it lacks the muscle tone and the neurological coordination to suddenly rest against the palate. Myofunctional therapy involves highly targeted exercises. A therapist might have a patient practice suctioning the entire body of the tongue against the roof of the mouth and holding it there to build endurance.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, and they practice precise swallowing mechanics that don't involve thrusting the tongue forward against the teeth.
It's about creating neuroplasticity. You have to teach the brain how to use the tongue in its newly freed state. In fact, doing these targeted exercises before a release procedure strengthens the muscles in preparation.
Absolutely.
And doing them extensively after the procedure prevents the tissue from healing tight again and ensures the correct biomechanics are locked in. For many adults and children, myofunctional therapy alone can resolve the symptoms without any surgery at all, simply by maximizing the function of the surrounding muscles.
A structural release without functional therapy is often a wasted effort. The holistic, functional approach is the only way to turn the anxiety and uncertainty of a diagnosis into a clear, pragmatic pathway to health.
Let's bring all of these complex mechanics together. We began by challenging the very human instinct to trust what we see in the mirror. A tongue tie is, at its core, a simple physical restriction of the frenulum. But true tongue health and true craniofacial health is dictated entirely by daily biomechanical tasks.
Forming a secure vacuum to feed, lateralizing to chew food safely.
Providing orthopedic scaffolding to expand the airway, and breathing efficiently through the nose. Function will always matter more than appearance. Watchful waiting is a highly valid approach, and there is absolutely no need to rush into surgical interventions without a comprehensive real-time assessment of how the entire system is operating.
The human body's capacity to adapt is astounding. Our discussion today highlighted how an adult can spend 30 years seamlessly compensating for a physical restriction like a tethered tongue, entirely unaware that their neck, jaw, and airway have completely altered their mechanics to keep the system running.
It's quite something.
It leaves you with a rather profound question to consider. What other unconscious compensations, whether physical, structural, or perhaps even mental, might your own body be performing right now, quietly bearing the load just to keep you moving through your daily life?
It makes you rethink every ache and pain, doesn't it? The handbrake might be on, and you might not even realize it. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this exploration has brought you both clarity and clinical reassurance. Keep exploring, stay curious, and always remember to look past the surface.